But this time of year, we start looking at end time events, Feast of Trumpets, what it represents, what the Feast Tabernacles does, and it focuses on this end goal. And the title of this is Finishing the Race and Obtaining the Prize. Finishing the Race and Obtaining the Prize. Several years ago, I think it was in the mid-80s somewhere, there was a movie that was titled Running, just simply Running. Michael Douglas was the actor, and it was a story of him. He was a top runner in the United States, one of the top four or five marathon runners in the United States. He did well. But then around mile 20 or towards the end of the race, he tended to realize he was not going to win, and he would just quit. If he couldn't win, he didn't want to continue. Well, one year, I think it was probably showing the 1984 Olympics. It was, because that was Los Angeles, so it would have been 84. Well, he qualifies for the Olympics. He finishes third in the Olympics, which guarantees that, or the qualifier, so it guarantees that he gets to run in the Olympics. He trains hard, and he goes out for the marathon. He was always a fast starter. He would get ahead, then he would gradually fade. Well, in the actual race during the Olympics, he keeps going, and he keeps going, and he keeps going. He's at about mile 20, and he realizes he's ahead, and he feels great. Well, it starts raining. It's raining. He continues to run. The blacktop is slick. And he falls. And he falls over into a ditch. And he bangs himself up pretty good. He's in the ditch. He's trying to recover. But he also has that thought in his mind that just quit again. People pass him. They continue to pass him. And he's lying in the ditch. And the thought of quitting is very strong. Goes on in the movie, the next scene you see are the people finishing the race for the marathon. In the marathon, they actually end up on the track. They take one lap to actually end the marathon. So they show the winners, continue on with other sports. And then about 6 hours later, they say, we'd like to go back to the marathon because something is happening here. And it shows Michael Douglas. He had decided not to quit. It was showing him, and he could barely walk. He was hobbled, cut up. And he finished the race 6 or 7 hours after everyone else did. And it showed that he decided not to quit at the last minute. What about us? We're still here. We're still here. Today I'd like to look at 7 points about this race that we're running. We're about to enter the holy days again, and we realize that end time, a lot of us that grew up in this assumed it would be over by now, and it's not. It's not. Let's look at what the Bible says about it. Let's look at Hebrews 12. When Tim said Hebrews 12, I thought, Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Like a marathon or any other longer race, even than a marathon, this is an endurance race. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Now, as we enter the fall holy day season, many of us have been through 20, 30, 40, fall holy day, Janie, maybe 75. I got permission from my wife to do that, so sorry. Blame her. And it may be some people's first, second, third fall holy day season. No matter what it is, this truly is an endurance race for all of us. Many that we know have run that race, especially the last couple of years, their race is over, and they're waiting for that trumpet that will call. But our race is still here. We are still here. Again, I'd like to look at 7 points today that will give us an idea of the way to run this race and obtain the prize. Point number one, this is not a sprint. This is not a sprint. If you watch the Olympics to watch the 100-meter run, it's pretty impressive. These guys are unbelievably fast. How fast they are. But they run for 10 seconds and it's over. It's fascinating to watch, but it's not a long race. It's like this, it's over. Let's look at Hebrews 10 while we're over there. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Hebrews 10, verse 36, it says, "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise." Need of endurance. Think back to all the people that we've known that have attended church throughout the years. Where are they now? Where are they? Many of them simply dropped out of the race. I remember in the mid-80s, St. Petersburg had a feast site 1 year, 15,000 people at one feast site. Huge. And we don't see anything like this today. If we have 1,000 people at a feast site, any of the churches, that's pretty impressive. People treated it like a sprint. That 10 seconds and boom, it's over. Not an endurance race. Like I said earlier, we just assumed, I think Rob, Tim, we all kind of grew up together. We weren't going to have children. We weren't going to be married, especially not grandchildren. Now we're all there. But we're here because we're still in the race. We're still in the race. Found out it wasn't a sprint. We keep going. We all know someone that's come into the church, even recently, all excited. All excited, just gung-ho about everything. But then they lose that ambition or lose that excitement. Don't treat it like an endurance race. You can't go all out sprinting and continue and expect to finish a race. Point number two, a long race requires sustenance. A long race requires sustenance. You have to have food to continue a race. The Ironman competitions and the Ironman finals is held in Hawaii each year in that brutally hot lava fields where they end up running. But an Ironman competition consists of 2.4-mile swim followed by a 112-mile bike and then ending in those lava fields where it's 120 degrees throughout that on a marathon, 26.2-mile run. Those competitors expend 8,000 to 10,000 calories in that race. It's amazing because we typically eat 1,500 to 2,500 and they're burning that in that race. They have to replace these calories during that race. I will tell the story of my wife. She ran a sprint triathlon a few years ago and she doesn't like to eat a lot. She'd rather just out here graze in the grass, I think, than actually eat stuff. But she eats more salad, things like that, protein. And she was really in shape. She did well in the race. She did the bike, the swim, and then the bike, and then the run. And they gave you these gel packs that have a lot of protein in them. Well, she didn't like the taste of it, so she wouldn't take them. She finished the race, but she was exhausted because she had depleted her calories. And you have to continue to take those calories in when you do this. Now, since this is a spiritual race, let's look at John 6 to see that, yes, a physical race, absolutely, but a spiritual race, we do this as well. John 6, verse 51. John 6, verse 51 says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. We need this food. Yes, we need physical food, but we need this spiritual food as well every day to sustain ourselves. Without it, we're going to pull away from God. We'll end up dropping out of this race. We need this food every day. One more verse on this is Matthew 4, if you will. Matthew 4, verse 4. It shows how important this is for our race that we're entering. Matthew 4, verse 4. But he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. We have to continue this sustenance constantly. We need this daily, just like food. If we go without physical food for a day, we're okay. But if we continue to go out without it, we're going to harm ourselves physically. We need the same thing spiritually. We have to have this food every day, every single day. Point number three is we need to train for distance. Train for distance. Now, can you imagine training for a 10K, which is 6.2 miles? And then arriving at the starting line, and they've announced that it is a marathon instead. So you're running 26 miles. Would be a struggle to finish that race for most people. There used to be a race in Colorado where some of the top runners around that area would sign up. They would show up for the race and start running. They had no idea where the finish line is. No one would tell them where the finish line is. The goal was to see if you could continue long enough. Now, they quit doing this. They do it on treadmills now because, naturally, like everything, people started cheating. They started getting people to ride bikes ahead to find out where the end was and then letting them know. But can you imagine running a race? You have no idea what the end of that race, where it is. We're there. We're running a race where we know what the end is, but we don't know where it is or when it is. We're running a race for distance. We're running it until the end, until our physical end, until that Feast of Trumpets day, until whatever. But we are continuing to run the race. 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 26 and 27. We have a few verses today, not a ton after this. 1 Corinthians 9. Verses 26 and 27. It says, therefore I run thus not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. We train our physical bodies to at least stay healthy if we can, but spiritually, we train our bodies. We train our physical, spiritual mind to continue. And we do train for distance again. We don't go all out today and tomorrow, oh well, I'm through, it didn't happen, so I'm finished. A marathon runner needs several months to finish a race. Does anyone know how the name marathon came to be? Mr. Perryman, I thought, might know. A marathon, they think, started in 490 B.C., The name came from something that occurred in 490 BC. The Athenian army had just defeated the invading Persian army in a battle in the plain of what is called Marathon. located about 26 miles north of Athens. According to legend, and this is where it came from, the Athenians ordered the messenger, Phidippidas, whatever, something like that, to run ahead to Athens and announce the victory in the city. So they told him to go ahead and announce that victory. He ran back to the city in late summer heat. Upon reaching Athens, he exclaimed, "Nike," which is where Nike, the shoe company, gets its name, which means victory, or "rejoice, we conquer," and supposedly collapsed dead from exhaustion once he got there. Whether that's true or not, that is what is believed to be the beginning of the term marathon. But either way, shows he ran his race all the way to the end, and then he collapsed with exhaustion. So we need to train for distance. And we don't know when our race is over, but we know we're going to keep running. Point number four. It's certainly true this last year. It's not a flat race. It is not a flat race. We don't get to sit on a nice track and run and run and run just on a flat surface. We're going to have a ton of hills on this track. A track's a whole lot easier to run on, but we don't have that. It's going to be difficult, and we've seen that. Many of us have faced huge losses in the last year or two. We're all going to have those losses as we continue this race. Let's look at Matthew 7, verse 14 for this point. And we all know this. Matthew 7, verse 14. "Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." We're going to be tested and tested. And when we are we running a flat race? No, we're running an uphill battle. We sometimes don't know how long those hills are, do we? You don't have to turn there, but Job 1, and I've used this. I know Mr. Perryman has used this. It talks about Job and how Job was the most righteous man on earth. God actually says so himself. But Satan actually is given permission by God to test Job, the most righteous man on earth. Now, if he's tested, are we not going to face that as well? We're certainly going to be tested just like he did. And Job 1, verse 11, it says now, and God, this is God telling Satan, "Stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." I'm sorry, that is Satan saying that. God allows us to be tested. These hills that we face, they can be our own doing, our own choosing, poor choices. But in many cases, we are to be tested. God allows us to be tested. He actually wants us to be tested to prove ourselves worthy of what we're coming up on the fall holy days, what that represents. How many families do we know right now being tested? Be it the virus stuff that's going on, be it everything that is going on, people are tested. Think about people, not necessarily in church, but Afghanistan right now, how horrible that would be to be stuck, knowing that there may not be a way out. People are tested constantly by different things. We have church members in Haiti that are going through a lot right now. Very hard to even communicate with most of them at this point. Point number five is stay focused on the prize. It's very easy when you have a goal or a prize that you know will be there, to focus on it, to occasionally go back to, where am I going? What is the initial, what is the final result? We know what it is, but we certainly don't know when it is. Back to 1 Corinthians 9, went here a minute ago. We're going to go back a few verses from where we were a minute ago. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 and 25. Now, we read 26 and 27, but let's go back to 24 and 25. First Corinthians 9, verse 24. It says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it." Verse 25, "Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable one." Now, what's so nice is it's not one of us that wins this race, right? It's everyone who finishes, who gets to the end, who endures. Unlike a physical race, if you win, well, the Olympics just happened, the gold medal, you are the champion. Unlike that, every one of us that finish the race get there. Again, how many people can we remember who lost sight of that prize throughout our lives? Maybe they chose wealth. I'm going to go chase money. Whatever the reason, they lost sight of that prize that God promises us. Went to SCP camp at Big Sandy in 1987. And if you've not been around the church since Worldwide days, it was a summer camp that you would go to. We actually went for 3 weeks at that time. And there were about 225 campers there. And you did all kinds of sports. That's all I cared about. I didn't want to hear the Christian living and all that. I thought that got in the way of sports at the time. Learned a little bit since then. But there were 225 campers at that session. And most of us at that time had all grown up in the church. And a couple of years ago, I talked to Sean Coryu. He is a minister up in, I guess, Indiana, Illinois. That area, and he was there that year with me, and he had kept in contact with people from different groups, Living Church, all the different churches that are about, and combined we came up with six of us who remained with any of the churches following the beliefs that we do, whether it's one church or the other, but actually following what God says to do. Six out of that 225 of us, who basically all of us had grown up in the church, they all lost sight of that prize. Now, can people come back, start the race? Absolutely. I had to go out for a year and a half and learn that what's out there is not everything that it seems to be. And some people do that. It's easy to leave, quit the race, but it's very hard to come back into it. I believe at the end time, when it gets really difficult, we may have a lot of people that remember, "Hey, I remember hearing that this was going to happen." I believe personally, it doesn't mean anything, but I think people may come back at that time. Now, do we say, "Oh, you didn't race with us"? I think we're going to be happy to see them. Just have anyone that's on our side, if you will. That leads me to number six. Point number six, it is easier to run with others. It is so much easier to run with others. Even if you're a loner, it's not as easy to run by yourselves. That's why you see groups of people running a lot. It's nice to clear your thoughts when you're running by yourself. But you push yourselves harder when you have someone with you. You push each other and continue to push each other. Look at Hebrews 10. We all know this verse. Hebrews 10, verse 25. Hebrews 10, verse 25. "Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." We do need to be together. We do need to be together. Now, Winter Family Weekend every year. We haven't had it for a year or two. But how many times do we see people coming home and people didn't attend church for 2 or 3 weeks because they're sick from that? There are times when you have to stay home, and we get it. But we are stronger together as a group. I enjoy fishing. In fact, my sorry son sold my boat this week. I gave him permission. I shouldn't have, but next thing I know, some guy's in our driveway looking at my boat. But he sold it this week, which is okay. But I enjoy fishing, and there are now two types of fishing line you use. Monofilament line, which is a single strand fishing line. And there's something called braided line, where they take much, much smaller, use different materials, and they braid that together. Think of a rope at a very small level. The monofilament line, a 6-pound test will be a certain diameter. With a braided line, even though it's smaller, it's braided together to make it stronger, and it's a much smaller diameter braided that will have that same 6-pound test. Something wound together, like us, whether we visit people, whether we spend our time together helping people, you're making that rope stronger and stronger. You can read about a mule. Mules that are tied together, two of them can outpull what each one can separately because they work together. It's very important that we're together on this, whether it is helping those that actually need help, whether it is whatever. We have to do this together. Imagine at the end time, if it is where you cannot have services, you cannot keep anything, the Sabbath or the holy days, as we believe, we're going to be happy to have anyone with us. And I don't think it's going to matter one little bit whether you're with blank, blank Church of God, whatever Church of God, whatever it is. I think we're going to be happy to just have somebody that's with us together. And again, I'm not saying one church is better. I don't believe that. I think that's all ego stuff that we as people can do without. We need to focus on what our prize is at the end. One last verse, or one last point, and it's the reason I enjoy this. I'll be honest, this is my go-to when I don't have something that I give, because of this final point. Point 7, do not stop to rest. Do not stop to rest. And now I want to tell a story. And most of you have heard it. It's by a man named Cliff Young. Cliff Young. Every year, Australia, and they quit this about 3 or 4 years ago, it hosts a 544-mile race. It's an endurance race from Melbourne, or from Sydney to Melbourne. And I looked up, if you left here, went to Panama City to the feast, that's 459 miles. So add another 80 miles to that. And that's what this race is. And it's a foot race that they take off. It's considered by most to be the world's longest and toughest ultra marathon. It takes over a week. And normally the people that run it are world-class athletes sponsored by people like Nike, Adidas, some of the running shoe companies. And they're typically 30, 35-year-old men and women, and they are in phenomenal shape. Well, in 1983, they're going up to the sign-in desk, and this guy shows up. His name's Cliff Young. No one thought anything about it because he's wearing overalls. He's got muck boots on. They think, well, he's watching the race. Well, he walks up to get a number for the race. He was going to run with about 150 world-class runners during this race. And they found something else out. Most of these teams of people, they have the runner, but they have several people that are their team, that give them their food, that take care of them. Well, they found out that his trainer and his team, quote, is his 81-year-old mother, That's it. That's his team. Everyone thought this was some kind of publicity stunt. Okay, this isn't true. He's just doing it to get credit. But he took his number 64, and he moved into the pack of runners. All these expensive outfits that these people have, and here he is. So a couple of reporters walk up to him, and what is this crazy guy doing? They said, "Who are you and what are you doing?" He said, "I'm Cliff Young. I'm from a large ranch where we run sheep outside of Melbourne." "You're going to run this race?" "Yeah," he said. "You have any financial backers?" "No." They said, "Then you can't run." He said, "Yeah, I can." He said, "See, I grew up on a farm. We couldn't afford horses. We couldn't afford four-wheelers, three-wheelers. And the whole time I was growing up, until about 4 years ago when we made enough money to buy a three-wheeler, whenever the storms would roll in, I'd have to run out and chase the sheep. We had about 2,000 head, and we have 2,000 acres. Sometimes I would have to run those sheep for 2 or 3 days. It took a long time, but I'd catch them. I believe I can run this race. It's only 2 more days. 5 days, I've run sheep for 3. When the marathon started, all the people just absolutely blew him away. He's jogging, they're taking off. He's almost shuffling in this weird little run. Not even a run, really. Now, he started it with world-class runners, and people were saying, "Please stop." People were calling into the media, "Please stop this guy, he's gonna die." And I forgot to mention that he had to pull his dentures out because his teeth were rattling while he was running, so he had to pull those out as well. But people were asking the reporters, "Please get this guy, stop him from running this race, he's gonna die." Now, all of the professional athletes knew that to finish this race, you needed to run about 18 hours a day and stop and rest, sleep, for about 6. Problem is, Cliff Young wasn't aware of that. He had never heard that. The next morning, when the race was started again, people were in for a big surprise. He's still in the race, and he had jogged all night long through a city past the other runners. He had not stopped at all. He did not stop the first day. He didn't stop the next day. He continued to run. When he got to a town called Albury, he was asked about his tactics for the rest of the race. He said he would run through to the finish, and he did. Never stopped. He kept running. By the last night, he had passed everyone. He had left them all behind. By the last day, he was way in front of everyone. Not only did he run the Melbourne to Sydney race at age 61 without dying, no teeth, 81-year-old trainer, but he broke the record by 9 hours and became a national hero. The whole nation of Australia, which if you know anything, Australians seem to really embrace this type of attitude. But he became a national hero. He finished it in 5 days, 15 hours and 4 minutes. Not knowing that he was supposed to sleep during the race, he said when running throughout the race, he imagined that he was chasing sheep and trying to outrun the storm. Never quit the race. It was the story of Cliff Young. I didn't believe it the first time I heard it. I had to look it up. And we don't stop to rest. We're Cliff Young. We're not running the fastest, but we don't stop. We have to continue and continue this race. I'd like to conclude, if you will, to 2 Timothy. As we go into the holy days and everything it represents, it's good to think about 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8. What's the prize and why are we running this race? 2 Timothy, did I say first or second? Okay, sorry, good. 2 Timothy 4, verse 7 and 8 tells us what the prize is. It says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." We keep going. Verse 8, "Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Brethren, let's all continue the race. Let's continue these holy days. Let's have a great fall holy day season. But wherever we're going, to Feast of Tabernacles, wherever we go, just remember that we do keep our eye on that prize.